The following broadcast of Sioux Valley Voice was recorded earlier. You will not be able to call in during the next hour. You can listen to past episodes of Sioux Valley Voice online anytime at ktna.org. You're listening to KTNA 88.9 FM Talkeetna, streaming from ktna.org. This is Sioux Valley Voice. I'm Philip Manning. Today on the program, we have two board members of the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation, Chris Mannix and Will Peterson. We'll be discussing the foundation's work and what impacts changes at the state level will have on it. We'll also be taking your calls at 733-1200. Chris, Will, thanks for joining me this morning.
Morning, Philip.
Good morning, Philip. I'm just pleased to be here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and got a little bit of snow overnight. Uh-huh. So
nice wintry morning.
Yeah, had a proper. Chris and I were talking just before we came on the air about how this is the first proper winter we've had in a while, and mm-hmm. it feels really good.
Yeah.
Yep. So to get us started, I want to just start with the very basics for those who may not be familiar with the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation. So if we just want to start with how it came into being and how it generally operates. Chris?
Well, it came into being, I think, in 2007 or 2008 when Robert Ambrose and I believe Joe Page and some other people were thinking of a way to commemorate the work of Jessica Stevens. And they got to talking with people in Anchorage at the Alaska Community Foundation. And at that time, the Rasmussen Foundation was proposing to build philanthropy at the local level throughout the state. Mm-hmm. And they came up with the local affiliate program, and a whole bunch of us in Talkeetna, got together and produced the reams of paperwork to qualify
sure.
for that, and the communities in the Upper Sioux Sittna Valley, Talkeetna, Trapper Creek, and the Sunshine area got accepted as an affiliate, and that meant a whole lot in terms of financial support from the Rasmussen Foundation, matching funds, pass-through grants, and that's when it got going.
Okay. And so since we'll get into, in the first half hour, I kind of want to cover what's going on now, the work that the foundation does, and then I know there's some plans and changes coming, and we'll get into that as we get closer to the bottom of the hour. But so to talk a little bit about, funding structure. How does the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation get the money that it then puts back into the community? Will, if you want to take that one.
Donations, contributions to the community, essentially. Let's back up just a little bit,
sure.
talk about the mission, I think, because
okay.
it
yeah,
all
no, that's
comes
good.
From there. The mission, I don't think it's changed since it was originally written. I'm not sure. Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but the mission is to build community assets for the development of healthy communities in the northern Sioux Sittna Valley. And I think what's key there is to build community assets.
Hmm.
I think our main responsibility is to build the endowment. And we do that through individual donations and small, mostly, and some large. And we're building an endowment since, as Chris said to us, 2007.
Okay. And so that endowment, the beginning of that endowment, that was the money you were talking about, Chris, with Rasmussen Foundation and matching grants and all that sort of thing? Or where did that come from?
Well, philanthropy's been around for a while in Alaska, not necessarily as long as the East Coast. And, when you look at the medical centers in Harvard and stuff like that, philanthropy's kind of new for Alaska. Mm-hmm. Rasmussen got into it. I think they started their foundation back in the 50s, if I'm right. And as they started passing on and then changing hands, I think they put $500 million into that foundation, and funds a lot of things, KTNA, some other projects in around the state, again, small and large. The Jessica Stevens Foundation became an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation, which is, you know, a much larger organization, and in close work with the Rasmussen Foundation, they started building these local affiliates. Chris can talk about what money might have been involved at first to get everybody off their feet or on their feet, but I think that that was the big startup, and as you're going to, we'll talk about a little later on, there's another push coming from Rasmussen Foundation and ACF, but it's grassroots.
So that endowment, then, that's ACF's endowment.
The Alaska Community Foundation is, I guess you would call it, our parent organization, and they're the holders of the legal 501c3.
Okay.
And we're, I guess, well, yeah, we're an affiliate. But they hold all the legal stuff.
Okay.
But, hey, I just want to back up a minute and talk about, you know, philanthropy. I think
where I wanted to go.
Yes, that's what this is all about. And one of the reasons to me personally that it seemed like such a good fit for this area is because people are generous up here. And you know, Barbara and I were the recipients of a fundraiser years ago when we had some medical expenses. When people's houses burned down, there's always been benefits and stuff. So Alaskans and people in the Upper Sioux sit in the valley are generally generous people. What this structure allows is for those donations to be made, put into a permanent endowment that's going to grow and expand over time.
So perpetuity. I mean, that's what it's all about. If you give money, I mean, you can give money to the Jessica Stevens Foundation and say, put it into your operating fund, and we could spend it, right? Is that right, Chris?
Yes.
Sure. But you could put it just in the endowment. We're never going to spend that money. We're only spend the earnings. It's an endowment.
Right.
So that's very attractive to some people, that they can give in various ways to the foundation. And that money's going to produce revenue to support healthy communities into the future.
So that endowment then gets invested, and it's the earnings that get distributed. Sort of similar to the permanent fund, I guess. I know, that gets very complicated.
I wouldn't confuse things. That's the idea. Build the body, build the corpus of money that supports healthy communities, and then I think, what is it, this year we gave out 15 grand, 17 grand, right around there?
We gave out, close to $17,000 just in our Healthy Communities grants, and then we had some other side grants.
And that's just growth from the endowment, the corpus.
Okay, and so that's where I'd like to go next, but I would like to remind listeners, if you want to call in, if you have questions about Jessica Stevens Community Foundation or philanthropy in our community in general, you can give us a call, 733-1200, or send an email to dj@ktna.org. So you've mentioned some of the local grants y'all have given out, and I want to talk about that. So, Chris, you mentioned the Healthy Community Grants. And can you kind of tell us what exactly those are? I mean, it sounds fairly intuitive, but...
Well, I'll tell you what they are. So we have, at the inception of this, we decided to put our money, and when I say our money, that's all the donors, you know, it's everybody's, into the following areas: compassionate health care, innovative education, social engagement, active enjoyment of the natural environment, and creative artistic expression. So when people apply for grants to the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation, and for the past 5 or 6 years, that's been through our annual Healthy Communities grants, those are the areas that we're looking to support.
Okay, and so as a local affiliate, do you get to choose those focus areas that you want to support?
That's one of our, that's our one of our jobs.
Okay,
and that's a really rewarding aspect of the job.
Because that's a fun part.
It is a fun part.
Giving away money, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, giving away money. It's not as easy as it sounds, you know, to give away money, because the grant requests far outstrip the available funding.
Sure.
But, and so we have to go through the selection process.
Yeah, it's a grants committee made up of a couple of the board advisory board members and another one or two members of the community, and all have a sense of the community, and look at the pile of applications. I don't remember, it was total of somewhere over 30 grand or around 30 grand in requests.
And you had about half that much to give out.
I had about half that much to give out. I think that there's this wonderful feeling on the board that we need to try and make everybody happy.
Sure.
Which makes things difficult. I don't know, maybe one or two of the requests were fully funded, but probably only one or two, if that. You know, so through those areas that Chris mentioned that we would, that we're interested in supporting over the years, the list of nonprofits and services in the community that have been supported are wide.
Yeah.
I won't list them all, but the Talkeetna Cemetery, Cook Inlet Keepers, Classroom with a View, Denali Arts Council, KTNA, Trapper Creek PTA, the River Coalition, Northern Sioux City Institute, the list goes on.
Yeah, that's a big list you got there.
It
in
is.
Front of you.
And, you know, ideally the amount of money that, well, I know it will grow, the amount of money that we have available to us to give away each year is going to continue to grow.
So,
there's been some great projects that we have funded, I think. I've said this several different places, that it's unfortunate that that schools don't have the support for arts in various ways that they used to do, that they used to have.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool to fund school projects,
okay,
art projects. I think the money's been well spent and added something to the community. It clearly added something to the education here in town.
Yeah. Another way that we give money is within our endowment, there are several different funds. There's our unrestricted funds, which holds the bulk of it. And then the Talkeetna Bachelor's Society has a fund in there, and they generously give every year, you know, proceeds from the bachelor auction go into this fund. And that's reached the size where it's generating some significant granting money.
Mm.
So last year, we were at a board meeting, and there just happened to be an article in the Dispatch News about an organization in Anchorage that was hooking up the local growers, the community-supported agriculture people, with the food bank down there,
mm-hmm,
and getting fresh local produce to the food pantry. And we thought, we could do that here. So last year, we used some of the Bachelor Society money and got that hooked up and started getting locally grown produce to the food pantry. And it worked all right. And we decided to do it again this year, but we've worked out some bugs, and it looks like it's going to happen.
Yeah,
well, so,
and that's actually one of the funds I have some personal knowledge of, have been involved in the auction at least. But it's and it's been amazing. And it just goes back to what you were talking about earlier, Chris, with the generosity of people. Of course, a lot of the people who contribute to that are from Anchorage or even from the lower 48, but a fair few are local here who give to that organization as well, the Bachelor Society.
It's one of the attractive things about that. It's bringing outside money
right.
Into the community and spent here for good reason. It's a great event.
So, and I want to back up just a little bit. Will, you mentioned or you alluded to some of the projects that you think have been particularly worthwhile or that stand out to you. And you mentioned art in the schools. Now, is that at Talkeaton Elementary? Where is that?
Well, it was in support of the PTA's financial efforts to support art there. I think it was here. Okay. Maybe it was Trapper Creek, too.
We've given money to the Trapper Creek PTA, too.
Yeah. I didn't mean to say these are the ones that there. I mean, there are lots more than the ones I just mentioned. Those are the ones that just jumped off the list at me.
Right. I guess one of the other things, having been involved in a number of nonprofits in the community that stands out, is that in many cases, it's difficult for nonprofit organizations to go after operating money in the form of grants. And this is the Alaska Community Foundation and by extension Jessica Stevens Community Foundation grants are one of the rare exceptions to that. I know Denali Arts Council, for example, receives operating funds from there. And so is that something that you see being sustainable going forward? Is it important that that's part of what you do in addition to, you know, capital grants or one-time project grants to be able to give those operating funds?
Absolutely. Will and I have both been involved in other nonprofits mm-hmm. in the community, and we know how organizations can struggle to get money to buy toilet paper, keep the lights on, keep oil in the fuel tank, and we are happy to provide some operating support.
Okay.
Some of the requests are for very specific things.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a copy machine or build a fence. There was a cemetery project a couple of years ago that was to basically tidy up the whole place. Bought them a weed whacker, too, I think. But others are just general. Not necessarily specific, but this is our budget, this is our shortfall, or this is our need, and help us out. And I that was an eye opener for me, I think, to when I learned that we will fund just general mm-hmm. operating things. I think it's a great opportunity for those nonprofits out there.
Right.
Most of them are very small nonprofits,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you have a group of passionate volunteers who probably sit on two other boards and do struggle with getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
So,
And you know, you mentioned that at last count, there are more than 30 nonprofit organizations operating in this area. Maybe 40.
I think it was when we had these big powwows a couple of years ago. I think it was 43 nonprofits at the time.
I think it was 4,300.
the word is per capita, the state of Alaska has more nonprofits than anywhere in the universe, and part of it's because we're so far flung and mm-hmm. separated, and we each have our little population center and create these things just for that little population center, and the human resources needed are huge, and that's
right.
Besides the operating money, the human resource is an issue.
Well, you know, and you mentioned the high rate of nonprofits per capita, and that's especially true in this area. But you know, one of the things that I've heard discussed before is that nonprofits are often spring up in order to fill a gap that's not being provided by a local, state, or federal government program. Now, in this case, local programs, Talkeaton and Trapper Creek, Sunshine, Willow, are all unincorporated, so the local government is based out of Palmer, you know, 100 miles away. So there really effectively is no very local government there. State programs, obviously, are getting cut. There's talk of federal programs now getting cut. So what sort of role do you anticipate there being continued growth and continued need for more nonprofits, or where does this go from here? Is more the answer? Is making the ones we have now stronger the answer?
Well, I think the need for mm-hmm. those services will never go away.
Sure,
and we will some more will come up. So is there a need for more nonprofits? Not necessarily. There's a need for an efficient system to provide the services that we all want to provide, and they're so varied. So, that conversation will continue, I would assume. But oh Lord, please no more nonprofits. It's just more people.
Yeah.
Yeah, more people, more board members, and
more asking. Yeah, all of us asking for the same dime. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get different dimes is part of what we're doing.
Okay. And so, you know, Will, you mentioned the fact that people are, if someone's on a board, especially for one of these smaller groups, it tends to not be their only one. They tend to be on two or three. State of Alaska requires you to have is it the state or federal requirement? There is a requirement to have a board of at least three people if you're going to establish a 501. And so you've got, with that, with 43 or so nonprofits, you're looking at minimum, well over 100 board positions that have 120 board positions that have to be filled. Now, a lot of these boards are bigger. KTNA's board is bigger, DAC's is bigger, and so on and so forth. And so, one of the conversations that was had recently was about how and whether there's a better way for these nonprofits to kind of work together, because one of the biggest problems, as you've alluded to, is human resources. Just putting enough people on your board of directors to be able to continue to function effectively or at all. And where can, from the perspective of the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation, where is that conversation at right now? And is there change on the horizon for that?
Where that conversation is at, I don't know that conversation is occurring. Maybe some other active nonprofit EDs are having that discussion. I think that discussion will continue. There was a clear evidence that a lot of people in town understand that need to be more efficient, work together. It's very difficult to get there. And I think, and I'm speaking for myself as a person who was leading a nonprofit and was very involved in that conversation.
Mom used to run this nonprofit.
Well, yeah, and it's just so hard. We have this, you know, and I haven't been working here at KTNA, so I might be way out of line here, but, you know, the KTNA has been a standalone operation for whatever, 23, 24 years now, longer since incorporation. And to change that is not easy.
Right.
This is the structure. You know, this is the guidance you get from the national funders or the state funders. And it's very difficult for anybody to go into a meeting and say, okay, what are we going to give up? And I think that was a lot of the questions that were raised. If we do this, what do we give up? What do we give up? Our autonomy? Do we give up our fiduciary control? Do we have to change all of our policies? And how do we get there is very difficult. And I was involved in these discussions in public broadcasting 20 years ago. And most of the time, and I'm not necessarily speaking about Talkeetna, most of the time instead of people saying, what am I giving up, they should really say, what are we going to gain through this? Because I think there is gain. How to get there, again, is...
Right. Well, you've got
difficult.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. You know, sort of related to this are some of the things I think that we can, you know, the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation can bring to the table. Because we're an affiliate of the Alaska Community Foundation, they have a grant program called Strengthening Nonprofits. And they bring outside help up to your nonprofit and look at that and advise nonprofits on how to get better, how to improve board development, financials, all that kind of stuff. So we can bring those resources into the community. We also seek to work together with other nonprofits. A couple of years ago, we worked with the Sioux Valley Peer Helpers.
Mm-hmm.
With KTNA and Jessica Stevens Community Foundation. So
the Bachelor Society money was involved in that.
Yeah, so we collaborated and, you know, brought those, you know, outfits together for that series of public service announcements and stuff. So there are small things that we can do to strengthen the nonprofit community in up here.
And the Jessica Stevens did support that work that went on a couple of years ago. There was an Anchorage, Alaska Community Foundation grant that's a strengthening communities grant, I think it was, that came to KTNA. We had a couple of big meetings and some consultants come in. And then it kind of, for various reasons, kind of died out, I would say. That grant is not closed, and the opportunity is there. I know that the ACF people, the Rasmussen people, believe that that's the way to go. But again, how to get there is just not easy.
Right, and that makes a lot of sense too. And I was present for some of those meetings, and one of the things that stuck out kind of goes back to the human resources side of things that we've already touched on. But when you're talking about the future of philanthropy, one of the subjects I remember that I believe it was Dennis McMillan brought up was the average age of nonprofit boards in the state of Alaska and attracting younger generations, even Gen Xers would be considered young on some boards of directors, but especially millennials as well, and how best to go about that. And are there thoughts as far as how better to attract those kind of people to get more involved in philanthropy?
Part of it's the maturing process. I think, public broadcasting, and I can speak about this a little better, but public broadcasting for years has said our audience is aging.
Right.
I've been listening to public radio since it went on the air back in the 70s and producing for it for just as long. And so there's a lot of people my age that grew up on it, but most people don't start listening to public broadcasting till they're in their 30s or 30 or so.
I was almost 30 when I started.
And don't start giving, don't start supporting till they're closer to 40. Mm. And I think it's the same thing. There in this community, there are some extremely bright, productive, energetic, enthusiastic people. And we can hope that they're going to walk in our door and say, man, I want to be on your board. But it doesn't work that way. You really have to go, I won't say cajole them, but you have to encourage them.
You have to go find them.
Yes, and say this is not this time-consuming thing that's going to ruin your life. This is, there are some young players in this community that will start giving back more than they already are. But it's part of it's a maturation problem, I think.
All right. Chris, any thoughts?
I have nothing but good to say about our board, and I'm really thrilled to be working with Ruth Wood and Sandra Porter and Kathy Trump and Maureen Galtieri and Cece Schoenberger and Will.
Yeah, it's
thanks, guys.
Yeah, it's
well, at least a couple of those people would be considered young by nonprofit board standards. So.
Yeah, but not the majority of
them. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And that's the thing too, is there's you've got a lot of the people you just named, Chris, are going to be very familiar names to anyone involved in the nonprofit world, or the civically active world around the Upper Valley. And so I think there's definitely an opportunity there for that experience and knowledge and wisdom to be passed on. And so, yeah, it does definitely comes down to figuring out the best way to do it.
Personal contact, I believe.
Personal contact.
It is.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're getting pretty close to the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break here in just a moment. But just a reminder, my guests today on Sioux Valley Voice are Will Peterson and Chris Mannix, who are members of the board of directors of the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation. If you want to join in on the conversation in the second half of the show, the number to call is 733-1200. When we come back, we'll be talking about some changes to the affiliate program from the Alaska Community Foundation and what that might mean for us here in the Upper Valley. You're listening to Sioux Valley Voice. We will be right back. Thank you. And we're back with the second half hour of Sioux Valley Voice. I'm your host, Philip Manning. Joining me on the program today are Chris Mannix and Will Peterson, both board members for the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation. Will Peterson, of course, former general manager here at KTNA. And we're talking about the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation, its relationship with the Alaska Community Foundation, philanthropy, all sorts of fun things. If you want to join in, the number to call is 733-1200, or you can send us an email, dj@ktna.org. So in the last half hour, we talked a lot about the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation and what it's been doing so far. And I wanted to talk some more, and we got a little bit into the future. I want to get more into the future and what's coming. We can talk a little bit about, we mentioned the endowment before, which is kind of where a lot of this money goes through. A lot of it gets donated, goes to the endowment, the earnings then fund the grants. So, Will, during the break, you mentioned that we've got some numbers, kind of an idea of how much we're talking about here.
Yeah, the total amount of money that's in the Jessica Stevens Foundation, and these numbers are printed a week or so ago, I think, and it's changed since then. I mean,
sure,
growing
constantly. Changing.
Total is $458,000, rounding off.
Okay,
that's total different funds,
right,
that are there. The General Endowment Fund, $352,000. The Memorial Fund, $24,000. And we could talk about those in particular if you'd like. The Ambrose Stevens Family Fund is $21,000, and the Bachelor's Fund is another $60,000. And those numbers are included in that total of $458,000.
Okay.
And just so that Chris, I'm sure, is going to talk about what's coming up with us, but in January, the numbers I'm looking at, we received just about $1,000 in donations. And so far in February, I'm black and white here, it's a little over $1,500, but I know there's been another significant gift in February. So based on those numbers, that's where we get the money that we can fund. Again, you know, in 07, 10 years ago, this number was zero.
So
I was involved in the Homer Foundation in the 90s when that was just starting. And I think, and Chris, maybe you've heard more, they just went over the $1 million mark a couple of years ago, maybe. And it takes a long time.
Right.
That's 25 years. This is not something...
With a significantly larger population.
Population. Part of it is, and this was why Rasmussen and ACF want to do this new thing that's going to happen, is they know that because it's a bunch of volunteers hanging out and trying to get things done, and they've provided training, but I think they've discovered that they really need to jumpstart some of these local foundations, and Chris will be talking about that. But so there's $25 donations, and there are thousands of dollar donations. And the other thing, a big part of our future, I believe, is going to be estate planning and planned giving. Which, you know, people aren't eager to talk about that, but it's a big part of life. It really is, as the whole population is aging. So there's a chunk of money, but it's the basis for a tremendous future, I think.
Okay. So, and we've alluded a few times now to some changes in the Alaska Community Foundation's affiliate program. So I want to go ahead and get into that so we can have the rest of the conversation within that context. So, I spoke with Nina Kempel not long ago and got kind of an idea of what they're going to be doing. But I'd like to hear from the local perspective what these changes to the affiliate program means and what we'll likely see as a result here locally. And Chris, since you were volunteered to answer this question.
Okay. Thanks, Philip. I love to volunteer. What the changes are the result of is the Alaska Community Foundation and Rasmussen Foundation taking a step back and looking at their affiliate program. I think there are, nine affiliates throughout the state, and comparing them to other programs across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And Nina Kempel, who we are thrilled to have as the CEO down there, anyone familiar with the skiing world knows, you know, she's a great Alaska skier. So Nina Sammy Pokrivky, former Talkeetna resident, and who just recently retired from the Rasmussen Foundation, and Diane Kaplan from the Rasmussen Foundation, did a tour, and they went to Arkansas and Maine and various places around the country that have robust community foundations and affiliate programs, and they looked at those and saw what makes a successful program. And the bottom line is that it takes years of support and nurturing. And so the Rasmussen Foundation decided to step up their game, and they and the Alaska Community Foundation offered a four-year challenge to all of the affiliates, whereby if we raise $25,000 a year for the next 4 years, or up to $25,000 a year, they'll match that one-to-one. Okay? So that's going to bring in a lot of
It's a pretty powerful incentive.
Plus, yeah, plus there's some extra pass-through money that's available for direct granting. Plus, there's an operational fund endowment challenge, whereas if we raise $15,000 a year for an operating endowment, then they'll match that. So at the end of 4 years, if things go well, our operating endowment will be $60,000, and that means the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation will have some money coming in to buy stamps and envelopes and stuff.
So the donations that come in, you wouldn't have to spend it as much, or potentially any of the donation money that comes in, because you'd have this existing endowment that could just continue to fund that.
Correct.
So more donations would go back to the community.
Yeah.
Okay.
So so it's an exciting time for
us.
Plus, I don't want to forget this, they also funded an affiliate program manager position, and listeners to KTNA will recognize Carl Walker's name. She was recently hired as our affiliate program manager. So she's going to help out tremendously with our IT stuff and communications.
So you've got a staff position then.
We have a staff position.
Which is a coveted thing in the nonprofit world.
It is awesome. 25 hours a month, which I think it's going to do wonders for us. A lot of it is in our information keeping numbers and and just to keep us in line, to remind us what we promised to do, make sure we do it,
And keep track of all those dollars you've got coming in, or help keep track of them at least.
Yeah, again, you know, with volunteers doing it, I think we've got some tremendous skills on the board.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a matter of, I'm not criticizing anything, but I think it's just a matter of, we will be better with a little bit more focused organization. So it should be good.
Okay. Yeah.
So the gist of the this new affiliate program is that Rasmussen and ACF realize it takes a long time for affiliates to become self-sustaining, and they stepped up to the plate and are offering that support. And so they're offering it, you know, to all the 9 affiliates, and then they're increasing the affiliate program.
That's where I wanted to go next. Yeah.
Yeah, around the state. So they're in discussion with several communities.
For new affiliates?
For new affiliates, yeah. And so it's a really cool thing.
It is.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, going forward, let me give out the number again. If you want to join in on the conversation about the Alaska Community Foundation, or more specifically the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation, or nonprofits, philanthropy in the Upper Valley in general, you can give us a call, 733-1200, or send an email to dj@ktna.org. So, for Let's imagine for a moment that I run a nonprofit and I potentially want to come to Jessica Stevens Community Foundation for, you know, a grant for X. Let's call it a lawnmower. What does that process look like?
First off, if you happen to know one of our advisory board members, you would talk to them. And,
okay.
But you can contact us at info@jessicasfoundation.org, or there's a link to our affiliate on the Alaska Community Foundation webpage, alaskacf.org. And more than likely, we would direct you to the Healthy Communities grant cycle that opens in May, and you know, say, go online, fill out an application, you know, tell us about your project, and if it something that, you know, fits under those subjects that we mentioned earlier in the show,
okay,
do it.
And then that goes through an advisory board process and then a vote by the full board. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. And then all the vetting of the organizations is done down at the Alaska Community Foundation.
Okay.
And they, you know, make sure that they're compliant, that those non-profits have all their paperwork.
Right, right. That they're
lined up, yeah.
Certified and have filed their 990s and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, you know, let's talk a little bit more. Let's get back into talking about what's ahead. You know, potentially having this additional funding, now having a part-time staff position, trying to raise money for, you know, various things, an operating endowment, matching funds, that sort of stuff. What sort of fundraising? Is there going to be an increased fundraising push then over the next few years? I would imagine so.
Yes, that's begun.
Good answer. Yes.
In fact, many listeners will probably have received one of two letters in the mail recently that explains the nature of this four-year challenge, and we're asking for donations.
And we're asking for people who have given to give more, but it's also looking for new money. You know, to hit the $25,000 challenge, these are ballpark numbers. I think last year we raised 17 grand. So it's not like 25 grand in new money we've got to do. What we have to do is step up what we've been doing and like do it half again, and we'll hit the goal. I'm not saying we're just looking for 25K. But that's to hit that goal, and I think we do that with just more of what we've been doing, more personal contact, more. It's one of the reasons we're here today, Philip, to communicate what we do, the successes we have, and what we hope for the future of the community. And you know, the mission talks about it all, and as Chris started out the whole thing, this is a very generous community, and no matter who you are or what side of the street you walk on, you want your community to be healthy. And this list of nonprofits that we funded clearly all contribute to a healthier community.
Okay, and you know, it occurs to me that we've mentioned matching funds a few different times, but there might be some folks out there who are out from outside of the nonprofit world who are unfamiliar with how matching funds work. So
this one's pretty easy. You give us a dollar, Rasmussen's or ACF is going to match it.
Okay.
Up to $25,000.
So
you give us 100, we're going to get 200.
Okay.
Give us 500, we're going to get 1,000. It's that basic. And it's dollar for dollar. Is it? Yeah. If we don't hit the 20, we have to hit the 25?
We don't have to hit the 25.
Okay, so up
we
to.
We certainly hope to.
But if we do hit the goal of 25 each year, they give us another 25 each year. And then if we hit the goal 4 years in a row, we get an additional 25 from what I understand.
Yeah, there are some other, you know,
some bonuses
yeah. along the way,
okay.
which are pretty
exciting. We have lots of good reasons why we should be able to do this and why we want to do this, and I think the community will support that too.
And ultimately, that money would then come back go right back into the community.
Into the community.
Yeah, it does. And you know, so something like our food pantry, fresh veggies thing, all that money, it just recirculates.
Right,
here.
Just comes right back in.
Yeah.
And Will, you talked about earlier that the more that money that comes from outside, the more it actually grows the economy here in a way. Because, I mean, it's one thing to recirculate it in a closed system, but once you're getting that money in, be it from, you know, the bachelor funds that normally come from outside, or in this case, matching funds from a statewide foundation. One thing I wanted to talk about, we've got about just over 10 minutes left, is Pick, Click, Give. That's something that, of course, here, you know, with KTNA being a nonprofit, we're intimately familiar with a lot of what you're talking about from an organizational perspective, and Will, of course, you know that. But one of the things that has been pushed in recent years and also involved Rasmussen heavily was Pick, Click, Give. And, you know, now with the amount of the PFD less certain in the years going forward, and with it being halved last year, what sort of impact is Jessica Stevenson going to – are you involved in Pick, Click, Give? And if so, is that going to continue? What does that look like?
I imagine it will continue as long as the permanent fund does. And our donors have been generous with Pick, Click, and Give, and it's a great program. It's decreasing, you know, as I believe KTNA's has, you know, as the size of the dividend.
Ours actually, we're kind of the exception of that rule.
Great. Good just for you. Because,
yeah. Well, we also have a very good way of reminding folks.
We do expect it to go down. I think everybody should be expecting it to go down. You know, it's going to be tougher to raise a dollar anywhere in the state of Alaska with the fiscal situation until there's some clarity. It's going to be very difficult.
Okay. Well, I believe we do have a caller on the line, one of your colleagues, I believe. Ruth, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead.
Okay. So I apologize I haven't been able to listen to the whole program, but I did also want to throw out when Chris talked a little bit about our annual Healthy Communities Grants Program. But since I think, you know, between all of us on the advisory board, we really know a lot of people in the community. But I want to encourage everybody when you see us to let us know about needs in the community that you're aware of. Because we, even though we do this grant program every year, we tweak it a little bit. And it's really helpful to us if we have a good sense of everything that's happening in the community. And I think we all see that as part of our mission as well. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I'm hoping that we're going to meet these matches, which is going to greatly increase our endowment and greatly increase our ability to make grants. So just want to tell everybody to talk to us about things that you are aware of.
Okay. And then if they don't know one of you personally, I assume that that information is all available online. Chris, I think you gave that information out earlier.
Yes, I did.
All right. Well, thank you very much for calling in, Ruth. And so we got a little bit of feedback there at the very end. But let's see. We probably still have time to take another caller if somebody wants to call in, 733-1200, and discuss the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation, philanthropy, or just the nonprofit world.
If I'm right, one of the things Ruth was talking about, an example of that is I think before my time on the board, somehow the board heard that the food pantry's freezer went belly up. Is that right? And then so Jessica Stevens bought a freezer?
Yeah, I think it was a KTNA interview with them.
Oh, and you heard it on the air?
Yeah.
So that's what Ruth's talking about. We do know a lot of people in town, but we don't know everything that's going on in town. And we want to hear what those needs are. I mean, the needs come out through the grant applications, the formal grant applications, but conversations at the post office are pretty significant too.
Sure, yeah. And that's, you know, it's interesting because that small town dynamic that you just alluded to there, because it does, word does travel fast, both bad and good a lot of the time.
It does.
And so, but that's, I think that's a good thing for people to know that there is, you know, that this organization exists. Hopefully people who didn't know that maybe that Jessica Stevens Community Foundation even existed will know that there's this, you know, resource now with these funds. And And is that and I think one other thing with the Bachelor's Fund is that that's not the crisis fund, is it? Is that administered through the clinic, or is that the one and the same?
Well, no, there are two different funds.
Okay.
Although we granted money from their fund in the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation to the clinic's fund, because that was dwindling down, and the clinic uses that money to aid families in crisis, and they're able to buy plane tickets or trips to the hospital and stuff
right.
like that.
Yeah, no.
So, yeah.
And so is there – that's one example of a fund that comes from an outside organization that is managed through Jessica Stevens, and you've kind of got – you've got a few of them or a couple of them listed here. Is there opportunity for more of those to be created in the future?
There certainly is opportunity, and there's talk that there might be another fund coming up here soon.
Okay, so. And then one last thing I wanted to hit on, Will, you brought up planned giving, and that's let's get into that a little bit. You said that it's not an easy thing to talk about, but. I mean, again, just for people who might have never thought about the possibility, can one or both of you kind of describe what planned giving is, how it works, and how it benefits an organization?
Well, it's planned. It's not. It's some of our $100 donations are somewhat impromptu. We all most of us give money and give it wisely, and it's not a large amount of money, but when the time comes. When we're no longer here, I think everybody thinks about what goes on with their whatever they own, their estate. And it's good to be in control of that. Some people it all goes to their family. Some people it all goes to save a cat or something. But it ought to be planned out. There are people in this town who have said, I don't plan on passing anytime soon, but I want you to know that. The foundation is named in the will, and that does something for those people. It does something for us. It helps us with raising more money. Those conversations, we'd like to hear from people who have named the foundation, designated the foundation as a beneficiary, not everybody has anything to give on a daily basis, and not everybody has anything to give long term either. But I think we all have the opportunity down the road to contribute back to our community through planning. We all need to do it. At a certain age, you better have a will, and
right.
so that you do control what happens with whatever legacy you may or may not have.
Okay, and so that just...
I think there's a big, long conversation to happen about that, several, actually.
Well, and of course, and it's going to vary from person to person their individual wishes are, but I know that it's whenever you hear, if you listen to NPR, you're going to hear a lot about, donations and foundations and stuff that were given as part of this sort of planned giving. Now, of course, those are from people who,
had some resources.
Often very wealthy.
But
that also happens on a much smaller scale, too.
Yeah. And a few years ago, we had an estate planning seminar up here, and we're about due to have another one. And it's good for anyone, regardless of whether you choose to give to Jessica Stevens Community Foundation or not.
Or directly to a nonprofit. We don't want anybody to not support the individual nonprofits,
right?
At all. We try not to be competitive, but we're going to do what we can to raise money.
Right. Well, and that's that's a good point you bring up, because it kind of goes back to the sheer number of nonprofits that exist in this area. Is I think there's the possibility of a perception of a zero-sum game, as it were, where if somebody gives $100 to KTNA, it's $100 that isn't going to the Denali Arts Council or to Jessica Stevens or the Food Pantry or any of the 40 others that are out there. But I mean, I think recently I think we're seeing that that's not necessarily true, and that the goal of a lot of these organizations as a whole is a healthier community. And if you have a healthier community, it grows the base of what everybody can eventually have.
How's that go? Rising tide floats all boats.
Exactly. Exactly.
Ideally.
Ideally. So we've got just a few minutes left on the program today. So I want to give you all an opportunity, any sort of parting message, or since you all are in the midst of this big, this new fundraising push in pursuit of these matching funds, I want to give you all the opportunity again to give out the information on how they can get in touch with the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation and how they can give.
All right. Well, you can give a variety of ways, cash, check, credit card. you can sign over an IRA or but to get in contact with us through the alaskacf.org website, and you'll see an affiliates link there, or info@jessicasfoundation.org, or talk to Ruth Wood or Sandra Porter or Will or myself or Maureen or Kathy or Cece. And
you've got that names memorized. Pretty good.
It's like he's given this pitch before.
I have to go, okay, who am I missing? You got them all.
Okay, so there's a lot of different ways to give, and a lot of different people to talk to. I guess if people have their own individual questions, didn't get a chance to call in, then they can assume contact those people as well and kind of ask if they have questions I didn't think of.
Yeah, we'd be happy to hear them all. Clearly.
Okay. And so let's see. That is just about all the time we've got on the program today. I'd like to thank my guests, Chris Mannix and Will Peterson from the Jessica Stevens Community Foundation Board of Directors. If you missed part of the show or want to listen in again, Sioux Valley Voice will rebroadcast tonight at 7 p.m. I'm Philip Manning, and as always, thanks for listening.